And a very good evening to you. My name's Simon Pride. Steve Howie, former Newcastle defender Marco Gabbiadini, ex-Sunderland striker, with me on the show tonight as well. And sometimes I get the feeling, fellas, when we have a guest in the studio, that an hour might not be enough. I think tonight's guest may fit into that category. Anybody who has spent, well more than 30 years at the heart of a football club like Newcastle United will have a few stories to tell. And I think Derek Wright is just such a person. Now, Derek retired as the club's head physio in 2022. His new book, My Story in Black and White, lifts the lid on the ups and downs experienced by the club over his period working there. And Derek is in the studio with us now. Derek, good evening.
Good evening.
Thank you very much indeed for coming in.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. You did tell me before you came in tonight that if you were going to dish the dirt on Steve Howie, you would be here all night.
Yes, no, he was a good lad, Steve, and is he here?
He's there. Yes. He's in the background waiting for you to say something.
In the background, right. I'm just listening intently. Yeah.
No, he was a good lad.
Most of your stories about him are on broadcast.
All right, yeah, that's true.
Is that fair enough?
I think a lot of the stuff I have to take to the grave as well, so yes, he's a good lad, and we had some great times together, really.
I do understand, my sources tell me, that there is a story involving you both and Kevin Keegan and Fancy Dress.
Yes.
Is that broadcastable? I don't know.
I think Steve sort of broadcasted a couple of times, I think.
Okay. I don't know which of you wants to tell it then.
I'll let Derek tell it because he's the guest.
Right, yes. We had it was a Christmas party and we all decided to go in Fancy Dress. Now, bearing in mind that about a month or two before we'd been, I'd been away with Stephen and Alan Shearer on a medical trip, and a couple of things didn't work out too well on the trip, and without going into too much detail, it got back to Kevin. Kevin wasn't very happy, and we were just at the time to go on a Christmas party out in, which was Fancy Dress. Now, yes. He called Stephen, which was in a emu costume. And then
one of those ones where the legs dangle off the front, Steve,
yes.
Is that right? Okay,
yes.
And you've got, yeah, okay.
And a droopy head. And Kevin decided to give him a right rollicking, basically, of what was happening, this, that, and the other. And Steve, you know, from what I wasn't actually in the room, but what Steve told me, that the head kept drooping down and sort of in shame when Kevin was sort of going for it and then perking back up again and then going down, and Kevin didn't see the funny side of that and then just shouted out, "Where's Derek at?" So in that time I decided to go to Paul Ferris and Ray Thompson and say, "Look, my outfit is the Pink Fairy. There's no way I can go in that room." I could hear the bollocking that was going on with Steve. I said, "There's no way I can go in with a Pink Fairy." And they were like, "No problem, you go in. You'll be fine. He loves you, Kevin." So sure enough, went in as a Pink Fairy, Dr. Martens, you know, Mary Antoinette wig, wand. And, I can't sort of say what Kevin said at the time.
Right.
But it was...
Did he come close to breaking and laughing at all, or was he still not happy?
No, he wasn't happy with me. Rightly so. I mean, I was supposed to be in charge of these two when we were away, and probably didn't do as well as I should have done on that occasion. And and yes, got sort of full power from Kevin, and I didn't look at anybody. I was ashamed of myself then and just trooped out for the team photograph, and Kevin was, you know, I just looked back and I saw Kevin looking out the window with Terry Mack just shaking his head.
I can imagine you in there, Steve. I bet you, Marco, you can imagine this as well. You'd have been like a naughty schoolboy being told off in your costume, trying not to smirk while you were...
I was trying to. Do you know the thing about it is what annoyed me? Not the fact that I got a bollocking, because that didn't bother me.
We'll call it a rollicking, just to be
rollicking. Sorry, I knew we were like I was in the wrong, and I can take the calling by the manager, and he was. I mean, that was one of the very few times I really did see him kind of upset.
Yeah.
But what annoyed me about it was he dragged in Alan before the two of us, and this was before I was changed, and Al had come out the room, and the two of them were laughing.
Right.
So I'd sort of said he went, I'll see you in a second. So I just thought, well, I might as well go up and get changed.
Yes.
Because I just thought, well, it's not that bad.
Yes.
So then when I've gone in with my outfit, he's absolutely given us both barrels. And I was like, hold on a second. I've just been absolutely thrown over the coals. Derek has as well. But the blue-eyed boy, not a problem. Yeah. He comes out, they're all laughing at
Joe. Did he never used to get told off? Ever.
If you score 30 goals a season, you get told off,
well,
do you?
Exactly. I think
that's the golden rule. You know that.
Derek, how many managers did you work under then? Have you counted them?
I think there was 24 full-time managers and interim managers on top of that. I think it goes into the 30s, actually.
Wow. Okay.
So, yes.
So, I mean, how on earth did you... I mean, you must have a heck of a lot to talk about in the book. Okay, there'll be some things that you won't mention, but, yeah, what made you decide to write it all down now? And how did you choose what went in there?
Right, there was the conversation with my brother. My brother was a doctor at the RVI in a department, and he was ready for retiring. And he just said, look, why don't you write a book? And I said, well, I don't think anybody will be interested, really. And he says, well, give it a go and see what happens. We'll do it together. I'll write it and we'll sort of talk together. So within that time, I'd been offered a job when I'd retired to go over to Al Ain Football Club in the Emirates to help set up their medical department. So I accepted that, went over, and myself and John, my brother, just did Zoom calls and sort of went through stories, and it took us about a year. And after a year, we sort of reread it and read it, and John managed to get a publisher, and we just went through it all again and again and again. Yeah. And it was just got to the point where it happened, and it was published in August. So it was an idea really from my brother, but it was it's been busy so far, really.
Yeah, so it's out now, My Story in Black and White. If you fancy reading some of the stories, you'll probably hear a little bit about tonight. You actually started, Derek, as quite a few physios do. I guess we've had Paul Ferris, for example, in the studio before. You started as a player as well, didn't you?
I did. I don't look as if I did, but I did. And I was a 16-year-old at Arsenal when I was an apprentice there. And did 2 years, and probably wasn't good enough, really, if I was honest with myself, And it was, I'd always interested in medicine at school, and just went into physiotherapy after that.
So how did you end up at Newcastle then?
Well, my first job was Fulham with Malcolm McDonald as manager, because Malcolm was at Arsenal when I was there as a player. And went for an interview with Malcolm, got the job, spent 3 years at Fulham. And I was there when I started Fulham when I was about 23. And I got a letter from the doctor at Newcastle, Keith Beveridge, who said, look, we're losing our physio. Would I be interested in coming for an interview? And then I went for an interview with Big Jack the night before they played QPR on the plastic pitch.
Right.
It was 5-5
game. Yeah, Ander talks a lot about that game, yes.
So I went for an interview at the hotel and just spoke to Jack and the doc, and it was just a strange interview, really. It wasn't like an interview. Just asked me if I liked fishing and, how much money I was on at Fulham, and then said, right, I'll give you the same. And I went, right, okay. So it was just a strange interview, but started a couple of months after.
And had that been, because you're a northeast lad, you're from County Durham originally, so that was that an ambition of yours to Newcastle?
When I knew they were interested, I went to Ray Harford, who was the manager at the time, that Ray would eventually go to coach with Kenny Dalglish at Blackburn. And I just said, look, Ray, I've had an offer from Newcastle, and he just, he was understandable, he understood, and just said, right, fine, just if you can give me a couple of months here, get ourselves sorted out, and that was it, really.
Have you got any memories of treating Ando in the early 80s?
Yes, I think I'd mentioned before, Ando was as hard as nails, basically, and just did, you know, he listened to you a little bit, but he had a major big ankle injury, actually, did his ankle ligaments and damaged the joint as well, and we put him in plaster. And I remember getting a phone call from Ando saying, I'm having a fitness test for the Irish team, and I thought he was joking, you know, I thought he was around the corner in Newcastle, and he wasn't joking, he was over in Ireland, taking the plaster off.
Right.
Somehow, I'm not sure how, but taking the plaster off, cut it off, decided to have his own fitness test with Jack, and he was past fit.
Right.
But he wasn't fit, basically. Yeah. Past fit, and then managed to get in the squad somehow. So I'll not say what I actually said to him at the time, but it's all these years later, every time he says to me, my ankle's killing me, Derek, and I'll usually bring him back to that point, actually.
Steve, do you remember your first encounter with Derek?
Oh, dear me. I would have been 13.
Right, okay.
Something like that. And I can remember, well, when I first joined as an apprentice, being one of our jobs, obviously they used to rotate, because we were trained up with Benwell. You were either on kit, you were on one dressing room or the other dressing room, or you were on the hallway, or you were on the kitchen, or the manager's room, the kit room. And one of the rooms was Derek's room. And of course, we had to go in there. And if you were sweeping in there, it was quite fiddly, shall we say. That had to be brushed and brushed and brushed. Can you remember those heat lamps, Derek, and how big they were?
I do, yes.
These massive things. I mean, now you see the equipment, but it was like proper old school. I mean, Newcastle didn't have the best equipment in the world, but I think the equipment then, though, even the best equipment probably wasn't that great. But yeah, I think it was probably coming through as a schoolboy, used to see him little bits and pieces, but it wasn't until you become an apprentice and you're there every day that you get to see Derek and everybody else every day, pretty much.
Who was the physio Marco at Sunderland at the time? Do you remember?
Well, when I was there.
When you were there, yeah.
We're talking late 80s. Steve Smelt.
Steve Smelt, of course. Yeah, he was. He was there for a good while as well. Do you have like? Did you get to know the other physios at other clubs as well, Derek?
You do. Yeah. You have there's a Football Medical Association, and that sort of encompasses doctors, sports scientists, physios. But yes, every year you got together for a conference and a drink and a meal and what have you. But you're always sort of connected after the game, but just to say that Steve was actually one of the worst tidying my room. That's what I'm just doing. He was a great player, but hopeless at sweeping up.
Yeah, no respect.
He was picky, very picky. You've missed a bit. And sometimes you just think, I can see that bit, but I'm just going to miss it on purpose.
You need a tidy work environment.
Or push it under something.
You mentioned that story about Kevin Keegan. How did you get on with him generally, though?
Brilliant. Yeah. He did a little bit for the book, actually. And when I retired, he rang me up and he just said some lovely things. He just said, look, the loyalty you've shown and to the club, and you've done he was just lovely, the stuff he said. And we saw him, that's the last time I saw Steve, actually, was a Legends at the Gosford Park Hotel. And he was great. It was just like, even seeing the lads, it was just like you were all together again. It was a strange feeling.
So that time in the entertainers team that period, that was a special time.
It was, because what you normally get is a team spirit, and the team that wasn't any better than that time, really. And even my sort of time afterwards, you'd get sort of a decent team spirit, but they had a special time together, I think, and they were good lads. So honest lads, you know, they were good players, obviously, but as a group, and they were very respectful with me, really. I mean, we had obviously used to take the mickey all the time, but when it got to work, you know, if you asked them to do whatever, they did it, you know, and they were great, really.
I've only seen parts of the book, I haven't read it all yet, but I can only imagine that there must be a couple of Sir Bobby stories in there as well.
Yeah, Sir Bobby was really good. Well, he was like you would imagine, really. He was a gentleman. Mm-hmm. He was always sort of, you know, very sort of interested in your family life, where you come from. And he was from that neck of the woods I was from in County Durham. And he was just a great person, but he would come out with some strange. I'm not sure if it was just me, but he was like, we were away. You know, the typical Bobby was like, if you're on the team coach and you couldn't get the television working or Sky Sports on or whatever it was, he would shout out, yeah, they've got a man, you can get a man on the moon, but what can I get a picture on the TV, you know? And it was just, that was just typically him. And he was just, you know, one of the questions he asked me was like, Derek, how do satellites stay in the sky? You know, it's just like, sorry? And he went, how do satellites, why do they not fall down? I says, well, they're in space, you know? And he says, well, why don't they fall out of space? Like, just thinking out, I'm not sure if he was just testing me out or was he was just looking for conversation or what, but there was, you know, but football-wise, he was, you know, brilliant.
There's a message coming from Chris who says, I always thought Steve was quite a good sweeper. thank you, Chris. And a message that has come in as well from another Chris who says, I once bought a VW that had been Derek's club car and he left a Santana CD in it.
Oh, can I have it back, please? I was wondering where that was.
Chris, get in touch. So actually, we get a wide range of messages. If you've got a question for Derek, do get in touch tonight. There must have been some managers that you found, what's the word, challenging, Derek, to work with.
Yes, I probably didn't enjoy the route time. I think it was a difficult time for the club, really. And, there was sort of like personality problems with him and his players or some players, as you know. But it wasn't particularly enjoyable. I think he was very, you know, he didn't really sort of create a very good bond with me and Paul, and you just sort of were just a little bit suspicious about, you know, he seemed to know what was going on. I'm not sure how he did, but he seemed to know what was going on, and you have to be confidential with players, and, you know, players tell you things in confidence, you don't repeat, and, you know, players used to tell us things in the treatment room or me, and then he would sort of in a meeting come out with something they'd said, and I would think, well, how on earth
how's he? Yeah.
You know, has he bugged in me?
Yeah.
Me and Paul ended up looking for bugs in the ceiling and and all sorts, and it was just strange, but he seemed to know what was going on. But it was just that sort of mistrust, I think, a little bit between him and the players, and obviously that filtered down, really.
It sounds like you got on well with most players. I guess probably there were some players that didn't really help themselves and made things more tricky for you.
Yeah, I mean, I think, to be fair, right from early days, I mean, I remember asking Billy Whitehurst to come back for an afternoon session, and Billy looked at me and I said, right, you're going to have to come back at 3 o'clock. And he went, no, I'm not coming back at 3 o'clock. And I went, well, you're going to have to come back at 3 o'clock. And I thought, I'm either going to be rolling around the floor with Billy Whitehurst in about 5 seconds, or he's going to come back at 3 o'clock. You know, so he eventually came back at 3 o'clock.
Okay.
But Billy was testing, and there was a lot of players.
He comes up in a lot of conversations about players of a certain character in the '80s. Yeah,
yeah. But he, but at the end of the day, I would say 99.9% of the lads have been good, respectful, and been fine. Really,
I've got one player. That I know, I mean, because she was so nice. And we had Ferrer, Paul Ferris, and Ferrer was fiery. but I know probably you were sort of went a different way around it with one player.
Right.
But there was one player that, you have to admit, he was really, really difficult to work with. And it was Alexander Pastore.
Oh, right, yes. He was just quite sullen, actually, I think is the best way to describe it.
Difficult.
Yeah, you're trying to...
Well, he was famously given a sheep's heart in The Secret of Santa, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was, actually, I forgot about that. Yes. he was okay, but he was... I tried to get to know him and really didn't really get to know him. And like you say, Andor, he was probably not... I wouldn't say he was one of my favourites, but I think I just found him sort of quite dour, really, and he didn't really make an effort to sort of integrate with you lot or everybody else, really. And yeah. I think that was the...
He was one.
And yeah. you could see that. Craig Bellamy was challenging.
Yes.
Craig, I mean, when
was
I say...
I would imagine he would be quite demanding of you, was he, well, as a player? But
Craig was sort of very much up and down, and he was, yeah. again, Craig was fine with me, but I've seen Craig... in situations where you think, oh my God, you know, maybe it's with a younger player or even a member of the public or John Carver. And it was sort of times when, you know, you would think, Craig, what are you doing? You know, and the time when he sent Alan a text on the plane after the semi-final.
Of course.
And I think Alan went round and sorted them out, basically. But I think... Yeah, when I see him on television now with the Wales manager, it's just sort of, it's strange.
I guess he's developed since then a little bit, hasn't he? A few people are messaging and asking about Michael Owen. Obviously, he had injury issues at the club. I think, it didn't have the greatest time at Newcastle. Did score quite a few goals as well, though. So, what was your relationship like with him?
The relationship was fine, really. I mean, I think at the end, I don't think Michael did himself any favours by... And Alan sort of, you know, documented this himself. You know, there was a, just before, we sort of were relegated, really. I think, you know, there was, Alan was trying to get him to play. We went through sort of tests and sort of images and this, that and the other. We were looking for things and, you know, but at the end of the day, if the player, and Steve and Marco will tell you this, if the player... isn't happy for whatever reason with their injury or they're not right or they don't feel right, you can't get a player out there, you know. And I think it was just a difficult time for Alan, and you know, we were trying to get Michael out there and basically it just didn't work. But I think it was disappointing at the end, although he did have he had his fractured metatarsal, and then he went to America, he went to the World Cup and did his cruciate, probably against our, you know, I wasn't keen on joining up with the England squad, really, because I felt he hadn't made a complete recovery from the metatarsal injury. And I'll always, you know, I don't think it was the probably the sort of finest moment, really.
A couple more messages that have come in and questions for you. Let me do those now. Then we're going to have a trivia question. How's your football trivia, Derek? That's going to get tested. This evening, so we'll do that shortly. Stephen Leem Lane says, when players get injured during a game, they and the physio sometimes get a few words from the crowd, a few insults. Can you ask Derek if there's a funny crowd crack that he can remember at all at any point?
Yeah, I can't repeat it on here, but it was "you fat whatever."
Yes, yes.
And that was many a time when I used to go sprinting on and ended up around the far end of a field. And I remember the
word... You never tripped up when you went running on, did you?
I didn't know. I actually fractured my metatarsal once when I went on the field and had to grip my teeth and get off the field and hope I was never back on again. But
and then treat yourself, yeah.
Yeah, but the Millwall away, you can imagine what that was like.
Yeah,
so that was in the old ground. And that was probably the most abuse I've ever had.
He also asks to Steve, who was the biggest whinger in the physio room? I mean, he might be on the show tonight, I don't know.
Absolutely not.
No, the biggest whinger. Good question. At that period, I think, Bellas could certainly make himself heard.
Yeah.
Let's just accuse Bellas. You know, let's just pull him into it as well. So,
he won't mind. And Jack, who's in Lanchester, says, if a team has a lot of injuries during a season or if a particular player suffers numerous injuries during a season, do you as the physio feel some responsibility for this situation, says Jack?
Well, I think what you have to do if you get a lot of injuries or a particular type of injury, you've got to look into why, you know. So you have to do your research, you've, like I've said before, there's sort of factors on the outside. If you're getting a one particular type of injury, then it's a extrinsic factor. It's the pitches or the training or the sort of conditions or whatever. And I think if there's one player who has a particular run of injuries, then you look at intrinsic factors for him. So there's two different ways of looking at it. But nowadays, I think you have to look at it sort of player load, and they've obviously got a lot of data. You know, I know you were talking about data before, but there's a lot of data and on data on load and players and this, that, and the other. So to answer the question, you do feel obliged to sort the injuries out, although you don't feel guilty for the cause of injuries. You're not the cause of injuries, but if you're getting a lot of injuries, you have to work to get them back, really.
There's one player and one injury that a few people have been mentioning as well. I don't know if any of you can guess who that player is and what that injury is. It's an injury that I guess it still gets talked about now.
Do you know Marcelino?
Yes, Marcelino and the finger.
Marcelino.
A lot of people have given him a hard time over not playing because of that finger. I can remember, I think it was Steve Harper talking to me about it once. And actually, it was quite a bad injury. And he couldn't really play with it.
I was dust about him. And basically what he did, he ruptured a tendon in his hand.
Yeah.
And in the middle of his hand. So this was put in a cast or a splint, and the specialist said, the specialist advised that he didn't play because if he did, it would rupture the tendon again, this, that, and the other. And somehow, I remember in one of the papers, it came, you know, that it was a very sort of minor finger injury. And, you know, I felt sorry for him because really, I think it you know, battered him, and he didn't really deserve that because it wasn't that. You know, that wasn't the
truth.
And
he was told he couldn't play. And
he was told he couldn't play,
Okay. Marco, you've been listening a lot during this half hour of the programme. Anything that you'd like to put to Derek as well?
Oh, no, it's just good to listen to it all. But, I mean, we often talk on here about players playing with injury, Derek, you know, like getting through matches. Do you think, I don't know if you, are you in touch with modern day you know, lads who are still in the game? And I know you were working up until quite recently.
Yeah.
Is that still a thing, or are they pulled out, you know, talk about data, you know, you have fitness measuring and fatigue measuring, which causes a lot of injury anyway, doesn't it?
Yeah. I think do players play with injury? I think they probably still do.
Yeah.
I think there's probably a sort of a collective group discussion when a player's coming back from injury. So it's the physio, it's the medical staff, the player, the manager, the coaches. And, you know, like I said before, if the player, at the end of the day, if the player isn't happy, and or if we as a medical team think, right, okay, if that player plays, he's going to either break down or he's going to be out another few weeks. I don't think I've ever had a manager who's went against that advice. The only time I think was that it had happened to me was when I'd sort of advised, I think it was Graeme Souness, that Emery at the time and Kieran Dyer should be out for another few weeks with a hamstring. And I got to the ground the next day, and they both changed in the changing room. And I'm like, what are you doing? And then they said, oh, we've spoken to the manager's spoken to us, and the player, and they both broke down after about 15 minutes. And that was, I think that was the only sort of bad experience I had. But because most of, you know, I'd say all of the other time, they did listen to me, or, you know, advising if you play this lad, he's going to break down, or he's going to be another couple of days, just leave him a little bit longer, and they were fine. But I think players naturally want to play, and I think they did, probably in the early days, with smaller squads, probably had to play, really. I think that was a thing.
Okay. Great to have you in the studio, Derek. We're going to change tack a little bit, just for a moment or two, and do our football trivia, which we like to do on a Thursday evening. Just before I introduce Phil, as in fill in the blanks, I'm going to read a message from his predecessor, guest with Graham, who used to do our question. He's got a question for you as well, Derek, actually. He wants to know if, when a player from each side goes down and both physios have to run on the pitch and the players are together, did you used to race each other?
Yes.
Yes, is the answer. I think probably I did, but I used to say to myself, Derek, you're being childish. Don't race, don't do it. And as soon as I started off, I couldn't help myself, really. I was like, I didn't want to get beat.
Yeah, indeed. That competitive instinct is there. Okay, fair enough. Phil, good evening.
Good evening, Simon, Marco, Steve, Derek.
Good evening. Phil.
Thanks for coming on, Philip, as ever. And if you're new to the show, well, Philip comes on and he gives us a trivia question around about this time. I know we're running late. I'm always running late, aren't I? And then he'll come back on the show at the end as well to see if we've been able to fill in the blanks, because it's a multiple answer question that he normally gives us. So, Philip, what have you got for us tonight?
Great. Ahead of Newcastle Brighton on Saturday, I'm looking for 9 players that have played for both clubs since 2002.
9 players, Newcastle and Brighton, since 2002. Okay. And is the criteria, do you have to have made a first team appearance?
Yes.
You do? Okay. Because there's a player there at Brighton now that I was thinking of, but I don't think he actually played at Newcastle. Okay, thank you, Philip. And will you come back on again at the end of the programme?
Yes, of course.
Good stuff. Okay. Without saying any answers, Derek, are you in any of those?
I've got a couple, I think. Yeah,
okay,
I've got
straight
a couple.
Off there with a couple. Yeah, there's one. Mm-hmm. I think one so far. Okay, well, we'll come back to this. If you want to help us out with this, we can usually do with a little bit of help, particularly as there's 9 of them tonight. Send us a WhatsApp message, 08000 321 333, start your message BBC, or text 81333. Again, start your message with the letters BBC. And yes, we could probably do with a little bit of assistance.
Total Sport, North East.
BBC Radio Newcastle.
It's 7:35 now. The former Sunderland winger Aidan McGeady has announced his retirement. He's aged 38. He's played 127, or he did play 127 times for Sunderland, getting 29 goals. Alan Shearer says he's happy that Eddie Howe is staying at Newcastle and that the Football Association chose Thomas Tuchel for the England job. Meanwhile, the Leicester manager Steve Cooper says he believes in Britain's culture and coaching pathway following Tuchel's appointment. English candidates were among approximately 10 people interviewed for the job, the Football Association has said. Referees chief Howard Webb says there's been an 80% reduction in the number of video assistant referee errors this season in the Premier League. It's good to hear, isn't it? Blyth Spartans match against Gainsborough this weekend has been postponed after staff resignations meant that the club is unable to meet legal requirements for the fixture. Yesterday, Chairman Irfan Lekat said that the club was up for sale just 6 months after he bought it. In cricket, England are 36-2. It's going to be a tough task for them. 261 runs required to win the second test against Pakistan. 8 wickets remain at stumps on day 3 of that second test in Malta. And elsewhere, India were bowled out for just 46 by New Zealand on day 2 of the first test in India. It was India's lowest total in a home test. It wouldn't have gone down very well over there, I suspect. In rugby union, centres Sammy Arnold and Connor Doherty return to the Newcastle Falcons side to face Exeter Chiefs in the Premiership tomorrow. Fullback Ben Redshaw replaces the injured Elliot Obotoyinbo. There'll be commentary tomorrow via the BBC Sport website and app, and we will preview the match as you would expect on Total Sport. And the Olympic 1500 metre bronze medalist Georgia Bell is among 5 athletes to be added to the highest level of UK athletics funding going into next year's World Championships in Tokyo. And you're listening to Total Sport here on BBC Radio Newcastle. Simon Pride, and I almost said John Anderson then, Steve Howie and Marco Gabbiadini here until 8 o'clock this evening. And the former Newcastle United head physio, Derek Wright, is our guest tonight. We're going to talk to Darrow, who's a Newcastle fan, and is on the line in just a moment. Marco mentioned earlier that he is off for his long-awaited heart operation next week, so he won't be on the show for at least a couple of weeks. Some messages that are coming in for you, Marco. Can't read them all out. I'll read a couple. Brad says, can I just wish Marco all the very best for his surgery? We've had some agreements and some heated disagreements over the last few months. Always a pleasure to speak to him and share some airtime talking about the team we both love. I can't wait to have him back on and we can continue where we left off. All the best, Marco. You've got this, mate, and we're with you every step of the way, says Brad.
Oh, that's very kind. Thank you.
Neil says, evening, Simon. I'm listening, but not live. So he's listening on BBC Sounds. You can listen on delay there. And I've just heard about Marco's surgery finally coming through for next week. Please pass him all the very best. We'll be thinking of him and can't wait to hear those dulcet Gabbiadini tones in a few weeks' time. Love the show and thanks for all you do, says Neil. So thank you for that, Neil.
Yeah, I'm going to miss being involved, but I will be watching from afar.
And there are plenty more as well. Sorry, I can't read them all out, but a lot of people are wishing
you
well.
And lots of people are doing things to me on social media as well, sending messages. But so thank you for all those. Thank you.
Now, here is a question from Steve. He's getting straight to the thick of it, Derek, with this one. When the team's struggling, is it true the treatment room always seems to be busier? And do some players... Do some players fake injuries to miss games, asks Steve.
Well, the first part of the question, I think, yes, it does seem to be busier. I think that does go hand in hand. Feigning an injury, I've not really known a player feigning an injury. That's the genuine truth there. I think what happens is players sometimes maybe a little bit slower coming back from injury, whether it's, you know, psychologically or mentally, that's not good for them to get back or whatever. So there's that sort of aspect of it, really. And I think, you know, there's everything sort of going wrong and your results, and then you get more injuries, and, you know, it's sort of people are, I think it's just, I don't think it's the feigning injury. I think it's just you, sometimes it's longer to get them back, I think, really.
And this one has come in from David in Washington. There's a lot of stuff coming in about your cars for some reason tonight, Derek. I don't know why. David in Washington, this one. Hi, Simon. In the 90s, I had a mobile car valet business, and I used to valet the Newcastle players' cars. And Derek had a Red Rover. Is that right? Remember having a Red Rover?
Red Rover. I had a Rover. I don't think it was red.
He also, Derek went big licks early doors. That's Derek. You know what car I'm talking about, don't you?
Go on.
The red BMW.
I did have a BMW.
Is that what maybe you were thinking of? I don't know.
Benwell.
Yes.
And we were like, hold on a second. Derek probably had the best car than anybody at that particular time.
Yeah, it was the car that Gazza nicked, basically. Gazza used to have a habit of hiding my car.
Did he?
And just, you know, everywhere, Steve will tell you, everywhere around Benwell, and, you know, like, eventually I would find the car, but...
Raucus, it wasn't just, yeah, it wasn't just kind of down the road,
he'd take it a mile away. So I would eventually find the car, but one time I managed to move the car myself.
Yeah.
So when he took me, the car had gone.
Ah, right.
And you can imagine what it was like. So I did get him back at that time, but... Yes, I had a Rover because but I don't think it was a Red Rover.
Maybe he's mixing up the brands the and brand the colours. But anyway, he says, what a lovely gentleman you were, he adds. He says, Shearer used to sit in his van and eat crisps, says David. I don't know if that's okay. Anyway, we were Sunderland fans, and Sunderland beat Newcastle 2-1 one time. And one of us lads had a Sunderland shirt on under his jacket. So all the players got hold of him and put his head down the toilet, apparently.
Ooh.
I don't know if this is news to you, Steve and Derek. Anyway, P.S. All the lads were lovely, particularly Gary Speed, who was spot on, says David in Washington. Yeah. His tail there of, I can't believe that would happen, David. It wouldn't happen now, for sure. Okay. You've got any more Gazza stories? We've always got time for another Gazza story.
Gazza. There's the... When I first met Gazza, he basically came into the treatment room for money. He came in the treatment room and he said, I've missed the last bus. He always used to call me Mr. Wright, and he was, you know, not that much sort of younger than me, really. So I missed the bus, Mr. Wright. I said, well, do you want some money? Do you want me to lend you some money for the bus? And he said, no, I'm going to go carol singing. So this was July, pre-season. He went carol singing.
Of course he did.
Down the houses next to Benwell.
Yeah.
And he got the money and got the bus home, and he went carol singing in July.
Brilliant.
The only person that's ever done that.
I wonder if anyone listening now can remember Gazza knocking on their door and doing that. There probably is somebody out there. Let's bring Daryl in. He's a Newcastle fan. He's listening on the line now. Hello, Daryl. How are you doing?
Evening, Brady, Marco, Steve and Derek.
Hello, Daryl. Good evening.
How are you doing, Daryl?
I'm very well. Marco, I just wish you all the best for the surgery next week, mate.
Thank you very much.
Here.
Thank you.
I have a small Derek Wright story for you.
Oh, okay. You should have seen the look on his face now he's heard that.
Well, a little over 30 years ago, that's how far back it is, when I was just a young boy, I was travelling on the metro with my grandparents, and a guy came up to me in a full tracksuit. And I always remember because, you know, it was you know, no offence to Derek there, but he was a bold fella. And I always remember being that you know, that young age, and he came up to us and he said, and I must have been staring at him or something because of this tracksuit, and I'd never really seen one before. And he came up to us and he said, "I work for Newcastle United." And I'd never really twigged on until I started going to games over 10 years later. And it was Derek. And I always remember that instance on the Metro. another thing I remember particularly, I don't know if it's a competition that they had between the physios, but you know when a couple of players go down by their side, the race onto the pitch, who can get to the player first. I always remember there's been occasions where the physios will literally race each other onto the pitch to get the treatment done first.
Derek's already admitted he did that.
Admit to that, bro. I'm not so sure about the Metro going up and saying I'm working for Newcastle.
Well, you're probably just I'm not sure that's my thing. That's not your thing.
Are you sure it wasn't the lookalike? Because why would you go and say that anyway?
It quite possibly could have been back then.
Definitely wasn't me. I wouldn't do that.
No, that's not your thing, is it, at all? To like go across and say that.
No, I definitely wouldn't do that. No, but, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, that maybe that's just by the by, maybe the case of saying identity. But it's just one thing that I remember from the time. I think the question I would have for you, Derek, is, you know, in the years that you've been at the club, and certainly later on, we've been through a lot of times where we've had an injury crisis. Yeah. What would you say the worst one was that you've had?
Probably, I think it might have been when Glenn Rhoda was manager, actually. We had the lot then, and I think, obviously, Michael Owen was one of them. Mm-hmm. And I remember Michael Owen being what we had to do, because there was the two physios, and if you have, like, say, if your numbers go up to 10, 11, 12 injuries, then it's impossible. And if you've got a long-term injury or a couple of long-term injuries, they need a lot of care and attention. And we had to get somebody just in for Michael, actually. Somebody just in for Michael, and then the other physio had to deal with everyone else. And right. I think that was probably, from what I remember, that was probably the sort of most injuries I've had. But you can have sort of four or five injuries, but if they're all long-term injuries, then they need a lot of work and attention. But you might have 10 injuries, but 9 of them might clear up for the weekend, you see. So sometimes it doesn't matter on the numbers. It's the severity of the injury, really.
I guess for the long-term injured players as well, I mean, players often talk about how lonely it is. Everyone else is out there, and if there's no one else with a long-term injury, they're doing their rehab on their own. I guess a lot of what you have to do would probably be keeping them right mentally as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny enough, Steve's a point and example, really. Steve ruptured his Achilles, and he was sort of supposed to be out for about 6 months. And you've got to really, I mean, they go through a period of where they're just, you know, they're just trying to drag themselves up off the floor. And we, you know, you've got to do things, I think, which is a little bit different. We went to the lakes and fell walking and hiking with him, and you know, things like that. I'd go to the beach, go to the sand dunes, you know, you've got to mix it up a little bit, I think. And, you know, and it's amazing if they're going through a rough time or rough period, if you get them away for a couple of days in the hills. Not that I was a very good hill walker or map reader, because we got lost, from what I remember. But
that's the last thing, you know, just get lost with Steve Howie in the hills.
Exactly, yeah. You know, I think, you know, that type of thing, you just got to try and keep them going.
I will make this point. I think, you know, a physio obviously has to be very, very good at his job. But I think, which I've said numerous times, Derek was. And I know Derek's probably his dream job would have been the England job. But I think Gary Lewin was the England physio. But one thing that some people mightn't take it in, or mightn't realise, the physio, very good physio, and as I said, which Derek was with me, because we became very close. Because, I mean, I had 3 long-term injuries, which was the Achilles, I had a thing called compartment syndrome, and then obviously there was quite a few, the groin stuff going on. And at times, you know, you're putting on a brave face, and it is heartbreaking when everybody else goes, everybody leaves the kitchen from the breakfast and goes out on the pitch and stuff like that, and day after day after day of putting, you know, looking at the lads, having a laugh and having a carry on and watching them play and stuff like that, you do get massively depressed. Mm-hmm. And I was no different. I'd sometimes be fine, and other times I'd be, you know, you're just thinking, I'm sick of this. But Derek and Paul Ferris, to be fair to them, were absolutely brilliant, because at times we'd just sit down and talk. Yeah. And sometimes that's all you need, is to sit down and talk. And I can remember one time going to Derek and said, I need to get away. And I wasn't supposed to, but he just sort of said, just go away for a few days. Just don't come to the club. Don't be in the training ground.
Yeah.
And whilst it wasn't a long time, it helped so much.
Okay, so it's those little things that I'm sure a lot of players do remember. Daryl, thank you very much indeed coming on. Cheers for your question this evening. Derek has a few tales to tell. Derek Wright, former head physio at Newcastle United. You've gleaned that over the last hour. You'll be at an event on November the 15th at the Irish Centre. Is that right, Derek? You're going to be talking about the book there?
Yes, I think I've never done a talk in before. So
you'll be fine just like this, but with the people in front of you.
Yes, it's on the 15th, but the money from the book is going to charity, or two charities.
All right, mention those then, yes.
One in Stanley, the Community Hub Packed House.
Yes.
And one in Morpeth, which is the Multiple Sclerosis Research and Relief Fund. So,
good on you.
Who Kevin Carr's involved with as well.
And they will be most appreciative, I'm sure, of you helping them out. I want to actually talk now about another Evening With event in November being held here in the Northeast, because it really involves one of the biggest names in sport. This is a phrase I thought I would never say. The former undisputed world heavyweight champion Lennox Lewis is coming to Gateshead Leisure Centre. Steve Wraith behind the event has joined us. Hello, Steve.
Hi, lads. You okay?
Very well, thanks, Steve. Yeah, thanks for coming on. I should actually say that Lennox Lewis is returning to Gateshead Leisure Centre, though, shouldn't I? Because he's fought there, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. Yeah, he fought there in his amateur career, Simon. And it's great to be able to bring him back. Gateshead Leisure Centre, they deserve the credit, Gateshead Active, for bringing him back to the North East. And they're working alongside Gold Star, who've become quite major players in the boxing world with their shows with Eddie Hearn and Frank Warren in Saudi. You know, the Riyadh series is part of Gold Star's remit. They obviously are involved in the management of Tyson Fury. So it's great. It's a big event. Gateshead Leisure Centre asked us to get on board and help them promote it, which is what I'm doing tonight. And it's just short of 3 weeks to go until he is back. He's here on Bonfire Night, so hopefully it'll go with a bang on November the 5th. And
very good, very good.
Tickets are available from the Leisure Centre. You just need to call them on 0191 250 5066 or go to their website. But it's going to be a great night. He's the man who beat Tyson, of course, three times. You know, a heavyweight as well, champion, which is fantastic. But he's very cool and laid back, Simon. I'm sure you've seen him yourself on TV shows and stuff. Yeah. I'm not quite sure what to expect. We've had them all up here over the years, and Lennox seems to be very laid back and very cool and very calm and collected. But I'm looking forward to hearing his stories.
Yeah, he's always come across like that. I mean, he was, and history will, you know, looking back at his career, obviously one of the very best, wasn't he?
Yeah, one of the best. And you know, I think there was always a bit of controversy around him with boxing fans because, of course, he chose to box for Canada rather than boxing for the UK in the Olympics. But, you know, that was when he turned over professional. I think a lot of people, you know, didn't want to follow him because of that. But the sharp changed their mind when he started doing what he did on the heavyweight scene and really taking charge. But he was one of those characters who reignited boxing. I think his mother became just as popular as he did, because she was always at ringside and she was always part of his life. And you know, I'm looking forward to it. There's been a wonderful documentary on a TV company recently, a TV channel recently, which we watched, which is fantastic, which gives you his life from start to finish. So I'm sure you'll be sharing some of those. But equally, I am looking forward to hearing Derek tell his story, because the book is fantastic. And I know you've been talking about that tonight.
Yes.
My story in black and white. And, you know, Derek, I've known him for many, many years. Great guy. My favourite part, I think, of Derek's career, of course, like most Newcastle fans, was cheering him as he ran from the dugout onto the pitch. I never really saw Derek get beat, you know. I'm pretty sure he could have done the 100 metres in the
Wouldn't allow
himself.
It.
Well, we were talking about the fastest footballers currently in the Premier League because, yeah, Opta have just released those, or the there's been a report with Opta's stats there. I don't know who the fastest physio was. It might have been you, Derek, I don't know.
Well, to be fair, well, I'm sure it was really, but the lads used to help out. The lads used to put a block line in for the other physio as well, so they used to make sure I used to win, you see.
Okay.
there was always that competitive streak, because when we used to train at Benwell, we had an indoor like kind of training pitch. It was like a bigger than a five-a-side pitch, but you did not want to be on the opposite team to Derek if his team was losing and the ball went in the corner, because you could hear him actually coming towards
like
you're thinking, sugar, I've got to get out of the way here because I'm getting clattered.
Listen, Steve, great to have you on the show. Do you want to hang around, because we've got the trivia question which we've got to polish off in a moment. I think you might be a little bit of help to us, because I think we might be struggling.
No problem,
if you'd stay on the line a couple of minutes, and if you are interested in the Lennox Lewis stat, I think if you basically put into a search engine Lennox Lewis Gateshead, you'll find all the details there, Steve. That's probably fair enough to say as well, isn't it? So you can
if you want to
go along. It should be absolutely cracking night. And because the trivia question, the answer, sometimes we run up right till the end of the show and we've got to be off air 8 o'clock on the dot, Derek. So I'll say thank you to you now, just in case I don't have time to say thank you when we've eventually got through all these answers. So thanks very much for coming in and talking about the book.
Thank you.
You can give it another plug now if you like.
The book,
yes.
Yeah, my story in black and white, and the money's going to charity.
So yeah,
newcastlelegends.com for your tickets, Derek.
There you go. Well done, Steve.
That's enough plugs for the time being. But yeah, great to have you in the studio. In all seriousness, Derek, I should imagine we'll probably be inviting you.
And good luck, Marco,
with
your operation.
And yes, if I don't get a chance
you,
to
Derek,
say that Marco as well, yeah, we'll do all the
yes.
this stuff now because a lot of people are still messaging in and
because,
wishing you all the
there's
best.
There's obviously
Marco.
Something much more important coming up than that in the next minute. Yeah, I get that.
You can clearly, yes. So Phil is back on, as in fill in the blanks. Hello, Phil, how are you doing?
Thanks, Simon. Okay.
Just remind us what your question was, please.
Nine players that have played for both Newcastle and Brighton since 2002.
Nine players, Newcastle and Brighton since 2002. Okay. Well, Derek is our guest. I'll let you go first if you want to chuck
don't
in.
Let him go
mix.
First. I've only got one.
Dan Burn.
That's me out now.
James Milner.
Hang on. Dan Burn and James Milner.
And, okay, well, and I've got one more.
All right. Well, hang on to that one for now. Are those two correct, Philip?
Yes, they're both there.
There we are. That's one two straight away. And Mark, have you got no more then?
No.
Okay. Steve Howie, do you want to chuck one into the mix?
I am going to go Chris Wood.
Chris Wood, indeed.
That's a good, I hadn't thought of him. Chris Wood is a great answer. Steve Rafe, do you want to chuck one in?
Aaron Hughes.
Great answer.
Ooh, he played for Brighton. I don't remember him playing for Brighton.
I don't remember him either.
That's a great answer. Okay, Derek, what's the other one you've got?
Kasinga Luwalawa.
Great answer, yeah.
Another cracking answer, that, yeah. Okay, so that now we're on to five already.
I've got Steve Harper.
Steve Harper, yeah.
That's the only one I had that you hadn't said. I was going to chuck that in, but Steve's got that. Okay, Steve Wraith, any more?
I'll follow one as well. The other one I had was another goalkeeper. I think Tim Krull played for Brighton.
Yes, he did.
Ooh, that's seven. I'm glad you lot are here. People have been messaging in answers, but basically
I've got one more.
Only ones from this list. So go on, Steve, yeah.
My mate, Kits, Paul Kitson.
Indeed, yep.
Oh, wow.
Paul Kitson, okay. Good answer, because that's probably just after that deadline. So just one to get. Anyone? Any thoughts?
Did what was that striker we had?
Was it a striker, Philip?
Leon Best.
Leon Best, that completes the lineup.
Well, brilliant. Done. Tell you what, it's a good job
he's
we kept Steve on the line.
He's looked that up. He's never pulled that one out.
He wouldn't do that.
No chance.
Get in, lads.
He wouldn't do that.
13
games.
Out of that list, yes. Tsenga Luwalawa made the most appearances for Brighton.
Yes.
And Aaron Hughes made the most appearances for Newcastle.
It's a learning experience, this program. Philip, thank you. Steve Wraith, thank you very much indeed as well.
Yes, thanks, lad.
Thanks for your help with the trivia question. I have got time to say thank you properly to you, Derek.
No, again, thank you.
So, I've enjoyed it. All the very best for the book, all the best for the talking, and we'll certainly try and get you back in again sometime on the show as well.